Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Özil marca, Mesut Özil. Corner, llegó el gol de Olivier Giroud. Marca el Arsenal, marca Olivier Giroud. Gol de los Gunners.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there and welcome to another Arscast Extra. As always with James from Gunner Blog. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you. Well, what are we doing here, Andrew? What's going on?
I don't quite know. I mean, do you mean in general? Do you mean with the world, between the two of us? I don't quite know.
There have been some questions, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's not been a great couple of weeks for me personally. I mean, that won't surprise you.
But oh, what's happened what now?
Nothing, to be honest, incredibly, nothing specific. It's just, you know, the climate of the world feels a little unpleasant, and I'm not just talking about the turn in the weather and the dark early nights, but also an interlar, as if to rub salt into the wounds.
We really could have done
the globe.
We could have done with the distraction of football this last week. That's for sure. That is for sure.
Yeah.
I distracted myself yesterday by going... I went to the cinema.
Did you go and see the Amy Adams film?
I certainly did. Arrival. And
Is it really good? I've heard it's great.
Yeah. It's really, really quite a beautiful movie. And that might make me sound a bit... I don't know. It just connected with me on a very emotional level. Probably because of the week that's been going on. And just this... It's just fantastic. I can't recommend it highly enough. I think if you haven't already seen it, go and see it. It's just a really, really great movie. I was there beforehand. It was a bit difficult. I'll explain to you why it was a bit difficult. We got into the cinema, sat down. Sunday afternoon, 2 o'clock or 20 past 2 showing. Person or two people came in and sat behind, and they got a plastic bag of something. I don't know what it was, but they spent about 5 minutes rustling through this plastic bag. And I kind of hate the cinema because of the noises and the people, and you can hear them eating and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But this was before the film. Then there was three people came in, a girl and two guys, and this they sat directly behind us, and one of the guys decided that he would give a running commentary of all the ads that were playing, and he would explain in great detail about why the ad was terrible and how much he disliked the ad. It was really important, obviously, that everybody knew what he thought of ads that were playing.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, the nice thing about that is it means that you don't have to have your own opinion. Do you know what I mean? You
exactly.
don't have to make your own mind up. He can just tell you.
Yes, exactly. And he did so at every available opportunity. This ad is too long. This ad is, well, it's like a fake John Lewis ad, blah, 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 all this kind of stuff. Then there was the woman. I was becoming quite agitated at this point, and I was sort of holding my head in my hands going, right, just keep calm. The movie hasn't started. Maybe they'll just shut up when the movie starts. Which, to be fair, they did. So I was happy for that. But there was a woman sitting to the right of us who, I think, James, must have found a genie in a bottle. Like an actual genie.
Right.
Who came to her and said, you have 3 wishes. Now, I don't know what her other 2 wishes were, but one of her wishes was for a fucking endless bag of crisps. Just endless. She was like, rattle, 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 rattle. And it went on. Like, it, it couldn't have been even a huge bag of crisps. It was going on for so long, it just never ran out. So she has this bag of, I don't know what kind of crisps, cheesy Watsits or rancheros, who knows what they are. Just maybe plain cheese and onion crisps, I don't know. But the bag never ran out. Never ran out.
Oh, good Lord. I just continued on and on. I would say crisps. Yeah. Crisps are a noisier foodstuff than popcorn, even, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think crisps should be banned from cinemas, as should nachos, and anyone who wants to eat anything should also be banned. Like, get your fucking dinner before you go or afterwards. Don't sit there fucking eating in somebody's ear. But
have you ever been to one of those posh cinemas where they have like service, you know, where like someone like brings you like actual hot food and meals and stuff?
What? That's
where
that
exists?
Really?
In London?
No,
Andrew, in London, the most pretentious city in the world.
Holy shit. What, so you've got a table and you can eat a meal and you've
you don't have a table, you have like a little sort of two-person couch or booth,
right?
And then, you know, you order things at a bar and then a waitress like brings them over to you.
But like drinks what? Like drinks and snacks, like, but not like a meal, not like steak
Diane. If you order
Diane.
Like a pizza, they'll bring you a pizza or whatever. Now, I don't think they have steak Diane, but you know, you could probably request it.
Yeah. Jesus.
There's a dog barking away in the background.
I can hear that.
Curious about that.
Yeah, he's very...
How do you feel about dogs in the cinema?
I would be all right with dogs in the cinema as long as they were quiet, you know?
What can you do, eh?
Yeah, better than noisy snacks, I have to tell you. But anyway, yeah, that was my little distraction, and it's a very good movie. So I say, go and see it. It'll make you feel stuff.
By the way, for the rest of the podcast, I'm just going to crack into a massive bag of crisps and just sit here eating it for the next hour. But I must point out, actually, I did a stand-up gig recently, and a guy called Jamie D'Souza, who is another act who was on the bill with me, brought me a bag of ham on Ruffles.
No way. All the way from Spain.
Seriously. He saw that I was on the bill with him, and he had been in Spain, and he brought me a gift of some ham on Ruffles. I was so touched by it.
Oh, wow.
I promptly sat there eating them all. Delicious.
Did you share them with him, or was it you ate them when you got home?
I'm not an idiot. No. didn't open them then and there. I don't want to share those with anyone.
Yeah.
Very touched, so thank you, Jamie, wherever you are.
Yeah. If I was to get an endless bag of crisps like that woman in the cinema yesterday, I think I would probably go for ham on Ruffles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's reasonable enough.
Right.
Well, when you went to the cinema, I actually did go to a football match.
What did you go and see?
I went to see England against Scotland.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Yeah, there was someone eating crisps all the way through, infuriating. But look, Gareth Southgate is now the messiah of English football, having recorded the biggest victory over Scotland in several millennia or something like that.
Yeah.
And I don't think an Arsenal player keeps a ball in anger, really. Not even Jack Wilshere or Theo Walcott got off the bench.
Yeah.
But it was... and they scored three-headed goals. I don't have anything to observe about that, really. It's a fact.
Three-headers.
Three-headers. I went to that. I had quite a corporate experience. I was in Club Wembley. It's a bit like one of those posh cinemas, really. And there was a half-time, there was like a busker in the concourse.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
A
like
bit
a
like,
woman, a microphone.
Oh, no.
With a guy with a guitar.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a bit like the guy when you're at a party and like someone like pulls out their acoustic guitar. Let's do Wonderwall. You're like, oh,
yeah,
please.
Yeah.
Stop.
It was a little bit like that. And no one's listening to them. And yeah, I kept wondering what she was getting paid. Probably quite a lot.
Yeah.
I'd do it probably, but you know, I'll do anything.
I was just going to say that over the course of this podcast, we've learned that you will pretty much do anything.
but you know, it might have been the last chance to see Gordon Strachan in action as an international manager. So,
well,
you know, I really cashed in there.
Yeah, what a privilege that is. You know, something to tell your grandkids in the future. I was there when Gordon
I saw Southgate versus Strachan, the clash of the managerial titans.
Oh God, yeah. Well, I didn't really see much of what was going on this weekend in terms of the football. I did watch the last half an hour of Ireland against Austria.
Yes.
It was on in the bar that I was in on Saturday evening. Ireland 1-0 up. James McLean scored the goal. Mm-hmm. And then I think he ran off and did a big puppy-shaped shit on the side of the pitch. But
you're right.
Yeah. So he scored and Ireland kind of hung on. And it was quite amusing to watch the Lidl Ibrahimovic, Arnautovic. He got crankier and crankier as the game went on.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. And they missed an amazing chance in the last couple of seconds to score an equaliser. Austria, this guy sort of stooped and headed it well wide when he probably should have scored. But a great win for Ireland, that. And Roy Keane was on the sidelines looking decidedly mental with his big beard and his tracksuit. I do wonder why. You know the way there's this tradition of, Arsenal
mental
players...
people having bids?
No. Oh, right. The captain decides what shirt length, what sleeves we wear, whether it's short sleeves or long sleeves, right? Martin O'Neill must make it a thing that all his coaching staff have to wear tracksuits and trainers. Because he does, I guess.
Right. He doesn't want anyone to show him up.
Yeah, you can't be out there wearing a nice suit while Martin O'Neill is looking like, a guy in a tracksuit and trainers. I don't know what my point is here, but...
Well, Roy Keane's obviously helping. I mean, Roy Keane couldn't look less smart, could he? I mean, he looks... with respect, he looks like a homeless man who stumbled onto the side of the field and started screaming abuse at people.
Yeah, and look, there's a lot to be said for that in football. It's up there with passion and running around a bit as one of the most important things that you can do. But great win. Great win for Ireland. I didn't really see what else happened. Did Wales...
Wales played. I watched Aaron Ramsey play for Wales.
How did he play?
Energetically. He ran around a lot. He looks fit, that's for sure.
That's
good. They drew 1-1. They took a lead through Gareth Bale, as ever, and then they pegged back later on by Serbia with Mitrovic of Newcastle scored a late header, and everyone looked very sad.
Right.
I think their qualification campaign has, it's hit a few problems. I think they drew with Austria as well. So
yeah.
They've not exactly carried on the momentum.
I'm just looking at the thing here. Ireland are top of the group. Ireland played 4, 1-3, drawn 1, 10 points. Serbia in second on 8 points. Wales then on 6 points. Austria, who I guess would have been the favourites for that group. They're on 4 points. Georgia on 2 points and Moldova on a single point there as well. So, wow, there you go. There you go.
Yeah. I think Serbia are a decent side. I think Wales are a decent side. So that's a tight group, really. But Ireland actually doing pretty well given the competition.
Yeah.
Not sure exactly who they've played yet. But, yeah, so I saw Aaron Ramsey in action there. What else? Should we attempt an international roundup? What have people been doing? I mean, obviously, I feel like we should probably talk about what on earth is going on with Alexis Sanchez in Chile.
Yeah, we probably should. There's so much... I don't know if misinformation
panic,
is the right
fear.
Word. Yeah, but there is panic and there is fear. And I think there's something very... You've got to read something into what Arsene Wenger said last week, don't you? That he's normally quite quiet during the international breaks. You rarely hear from him, but he said it would be suicidal for Chile to play Alexis Sanchez on Tuesday. The information... Because they had initially put out that he had a calf injury, I think. And Arsene Wenger said, no, hang on, I've got a text here to say that it's a hamstring problem. I don't know if you've seen the blog today. There's a picture of Alexis with what looks like, very heavy strapping on his hamstring. So it's clear there's a hamstring problem. The seriousness of it is the thing that we aren't quite sure about, Is it a low-grade problem, which is what Chile are saying, or is it much more serious than that? Are Chile playing him because they know they don't have another international in a few months and they can say, well, look, we'll try to get him through this game because he's so important to us and we don't really care what happens to him at Arsenal. We don't care what Arsenal do or how it affects Arsenal in any way. So it's all a bit strange and weird and up in the air. I mean, what do you make of it all?
I don't know. I mean, it was an unusually strongly worded statement from Arsene, wasn't it? It seems he says it would be suicidal, but it'd probably be more homicidal, because it's not going to hurt Chile themselves. It's going to hurt us directly. Yeah, it's going to hurt Arsenal. And I think, obviously, it was a year ago, pretty much, wasn't it, that Alexis's hamstring went pop at Norwich.
Yeah.
And he missed about 6 weeks, something like that. So that must be in Arsene Wenger's thoughts. I think... I don't know how much control the clubs have here. Like, you know, can Arsene stop him from playing?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything Arsenal can do from here, or from this side of the Atlantic anyway, other than to express concerns and other than perhaps to make contact with the player and say to him, look, we understand that you want to play for your country. We understand the importance of the game against Uruguay, but also you have a responsibility to your club as well. We're the ones that pay your wages. If there's a chance that he could damage that hamstring any further, like, and put him out for a significant period of time, don't do it. Don't do it. But I don't know.
That's
that,
the message. Don't do it.
Just don't do it. But I don't know that. I don't know that he'll pay any attention to that. I don't know. I mean, what would your opinion be if, let's say, we find out on Wednesday morning or Thursday Alexis comes back and is ruled out for X amount of weeks because he played on Tuesday for Chile. He misses games against Manchester United, PSG, etc., etc. I mean, where would your opinion of Alexis be if you knew that he went into that game, the Chile game, knowing that he might aggravate this injury even further?
I'd be hugely frustrated with him, but also quite unsurprised. I mean, we know that this is the way he approaches the game at club level and international level. He wants to play every single minute. And obviously there's something short-sighted about that because it can prove costly. I think it would tell you a little bit about where his priorities lie, I suppose.
Yeah.
It would illustrate that international football maybe is more important to than is club football, and that's something that we've experienced it with English players to an extent in the past. It's felt a bit like that with Theo Walcott at times, and
Jack Wilshere
certainly in terms of what he's done this season going out to Bournemouth, and that would be annoying. I mean, the problem is that I really worry about losing Alexis. I think of all the players we could lose in our team, losing him is such a blow, because him playing up front this season has really changed the dynamic of the team. And I think, you know, aside from the addition of Mustafi, who's become a regular starter, that's the big major difference really between the team this season and last season. I think it's given us so much. So to lose him, especially at a time when the obvious replacement in Lucas Perez is not available, would be a massive, massive blow.
Yeah. So, I mean, how much responsibility does he have to take then? It's difficult. Well, I think we know that he's. If you were to ask him his priorities, Chile would be the number one. And I don't think that's necessarily just true of Alexis. I think it's true of a lot of players. Maybe not so much the English ones, but certainly some of the international players would prioritize their countries over their clubs. But we know how much he loves to play. We know how much he hates being injured. So there's got to be some sort of rationalization in his own mind that, okay, look, I really want to play this game, but if I do, I could miss 2 months, let's say. And that's got to be more frustrating than just missing, you know, one game. It's not as if Chile's qualification hopes will be completely dashed if he doesn't play, or if they don't qualify, nobody's going to say, well, it's because Alexis didn't put his body on the line for us. I don't think maybe there would be some hardcore lunatics who would say something like that, but the reality of it is that, you know, you've got to have a bit of common sense. And if it's a hamstring injury that could put you on the sidelines for a couple of months, surely that's much worse than missing one game for your country, I think. Well, is that just common sense?
That is common sense. And you would think that that would play out and common sense would come through, but it doesn't look that way right now, does it? I mean, he's training. It looks as if they're planning to pick him. It looks as if he's planning to play. I mean, we're literally in a position where we're just crossing our fingers, really, aren't we? And hoping he somehow comes through. And then, of course, Arsenal are left with the decision of, if he does come back relatively unscathed, do we have then take the risk of playing him again this weekend? Or is it us who have to go, well, he needs some time to recover, or he's going to seriously hurt himself?
Yeah, that's a very good point. That is a very good point. Because he could get through the game without doing any further damage to it, but the damage that's already been done might need him to be taken out of the firing line. He might have to just rest anyway. I mean, when you talk about him being the one player that we can't afford to lose, obviously the way the team has played this season has got a lot to do with Alexis playing at centre forward, and the replacement, Olivier Giroud, assuming he comes through the internationals. I think France have got a friendly, don't they, against Ivory Coast. In midweek, Arsene Wenger hoping that France don't play Laurent Koscielny because it's just a friendly, but Giroud possibly a guy who could use a bit of match practice and get some sharpness under his belt. But the way 2016 is going, you know, we could wake up Wednesday morning and Alexis could be gone and Giroud could be like knackered as well. So, but let's assume that Giroud is the guy and we don't have Hector Bellerin. He's going to be out for a while, because he's got ankle ligament damage. Those are two players who have a very big influence on the way that this team performs. And the replacements that we have, Giroud for Alexis, it's different. I don't think there's quite the same gulf in quality as there is between, let's say, Bellerin and Carl Jenkinson.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame, isn't it? Because, well, I mean, we have lost a central midfielder. It looks like Santi Cazorla is still going to be out when we come back from the international break. But that's an area where I think we can absorb the loss of players to a far greater extent. In fact, pretty much almost any position on the field than those two at the moment.
Yeah.
I think right back's the one where there's the biggest drop off in terms of the calibre of the options available. And up front, you know, without Welbeck and Lucas, it's not quite what it might be in the second half of the season in terms of options.
Mm.
So, yeah, Bellerin and Alexis are a big two. And, you know, when you look at that Manchester United team, I can't help but feel that our pace is an area where we could potentially really hurt them, especially, you know, if we're away from home and we can play on the counter-attack at all. We don't know if that would be possible against a Jose Mourinho team. But either way, that speed is so important to the way we go forward. And Bellerin and Alexis are, you know, two of the most obvious exponents of that.
Do you think there's any way he might play Theo Walcott as a striker, for example, at Old Trafford?
One wonders if the scars of Old Trafford earlier this year are still too deep, you know, for that. But, I mean, because Walcott started up top in that game. It was absolutely dire, wasn't it? I know this is a different Theo Walcott, but has not part of what's been different about him been the position. You know, I think he's been much better on that right-hand side. I think it would be Giroud. And I think, I guess what you have to hope is that someone like Walcott playing from wide can help make the difference too, rather than just relying on Alexis through the middle. But it's not the most encouraging news. You know, we always talk about November, and it feels like that old curse is beginning to strike now.
Yes, yeah. And look, maybe we are sitting here being a bit fatalistic. Maybe we're looking at the very worst possible case scenario, and it could be better. It might be okay. Who knows? I mean, I don't really think that, but I'm just trying to make myself feel a little bit better. That's all.
It's not your actual opinion, but it's plausible.
It is, exactly. You know, this could be a thing, but I don't think so. It's not what I think. I'd say Arsene Wenger is going mad. I'd say he's going mad. He did leave. What did he say? There was something he said during the week which was quite good. I have to see if I can find it here. He was talking about, you know, when players are away, he says, sometimes you have a sleepless night because some of your players have been injured, and sometimes you're angry because they play a friendly game, they're overloaded with games, and instead of being taken off, they play the full 90 minutes. Then he says, we've got an hour afterwards, where after all the fixtures, where we text each other, myself and the physios, to ask, are they all right? Oh, we've got this injury, we've got that injury. So I'd say this particular interlull, taking into account as well that Hector Bellerin went away with Spain's under-21s and came back from there with this ankle ligament injury, which I assume happened, during training for the Spain under 21s.
I think it was during training, yeah.
You know? So we've got Bellerin out, this whole Alexis saga going on, and then he's looking at other players who are away. Like Koscielny, he's going, give him a rest. You know, and you can't tell international managers what to do. I mean, clubs have really, unless a player is so badly injured they can't go, once they're away, they've literally got no recourse. They've no official channel to go through other than to appeal to the common sense of the international managers. And international managers may well understand the predicament of a club manager, but at the end of the day, they're going to do what's best for them, for their job, for their team. And if it means playing a slightly injured player with the risk that when he gets back to his club he's out for a while, they're going to do it 99% of the time.
Yeah, I know. It's a tough time for us, and he just has to, you know, sit on his hands effectively and hope for the best. But it's, I mean, look, Bellerin, Alexis, but I mean, there's still another round of fixtures to get through, so... I don't know, I'm crossing all my digits, really.
Yeah, they are friendlies, though, for the most part. In Europe, anyway, it's all the games are friendlies, I think, during the week. So there's no actual qualifier. So perhaps the intensity of those games will be a little less, you know. They won't...
Yeah. Having watched some of those international friendlies in recent years, I can assure you they will be less intense. Mm. But, you know... I wouldn't put anything past our guys.
No, not at all. Not at all. All right, what else has been happening?
Well, I guess, you know, it's funny enough, we've been talking about these players already, but there's been, I think since we spoke, there's been contractual news about Bellerin, certainly.
Yeah.
Not officially confirmed by the club as yet, is that right?
But not official, but it seems all done and dusted, yeah. And some stories today about Mesut Ozil buying a brand new house. Did you see that?
Yes,
I've just
seen
someone tweeting about it. He's bought a £10 million house in Highgate in North London, which would suggest that he sees his future in London.
So, well, I mean, it's a good investment either way, but yes, I'm choosing to interpret that optimistically. I think, and it also has a hell of a lot of money spent on a house, so maybe there is a pay rise in the other thing for Meza. Mm. But I... there have been a couple of stories as well, I'm aware, that I think Steve Stammers and maybe John Cross have suggested that while Ozil's contract talks are progressing well and should be confirmed possibly sooner rather than later, that maybe Alexis is a little bit trickier. I don't know if there's been a fallout about his insistence on playing for Chile all the time. But,
well, I mean, if you were negotiating a new contract with a club and... you know, you've deliberately ignored medical advice and put yourself out of action as one of the team's most important players, you know, there might be a bit of a standoff there. I believe that the Alexis thing, we've both had doubts about it, or concerns about it, I guess you would say. I think they're looking for a lot of money. And that could well be a sticking point. And I'm not necessarily convinced that Alexis is a guy who would want to see out his career at Arsenal. I feel like he's a guy who would look at having one more move, you know, to another club, to a big European club. It's a bit of a worry in that regard as well. So,
I wonder if, you know, I mean, that's one that's going to run for some time. He's 27. He'll be 28 in December. So you'd think that if he has got one more big move in him, it's sort of now or never, really.
Yeah, but the end of this season with a year left on his Arsenal contract, will Arsenal hold him if he decides that he's not going to sign a new contract? Will we just hold on to him, let him see out his contract and let him leave? Or will we cash in and try and find a replacement? That's the big question. That's the big decision for Arsene Wenger to make, should it come to that. But look, I think that's one we can park for a little while.
What else is going on? Shall I run you through what else our players have been up to internationally?
Yes, please.
Got a little list in front of me here.
Yeah,
courtesy of master.com. Well, Nacho Monreal scored a goal. Did you see that?
I did. Very nice side-footed finish. Lovely.
Against Macedonia. Yeah, lovely volley from him. Mohamed Elneny played the entirety of Egypt's 2-0 win over Ghana.
Mm-hmm. Good for him.
Granit Xhaka won his 50th international cap for Switzerland against the Faroe Islands.
Wow, so, 50 caps. He's only 23 years of age. That is
I know.
That's a lot of caps at that
age.
Well,
he came through at 17, didn't he? And he's sort of, yeah, I mean, he's racking them up. He's sort of like the Swiss Rooney, but not as fat or hideous. let's hope he lasts a bit longer than that as well. Ramsey, we've been over. Oh, what about Alex Iwobi and his little flick? Did you see that doing the rounds on the internet?
I did see that. Yeah, it was great. I mean, from the limited length of the video clip, it wasn't clear that the whistle had already gone when he made that flick, which is a bit of a shame, but what a piece of skill.
Exactly. I'd love him to do that at Old Trafford on Saturday, if he could pull it out again. That'd be nice to see. 90 minutes for Koscielny and Giroud for France against Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully, as you say, Koscielny will now get a rest. So, Serge Gnabry. Did you see him?
Yeah. Hat-trick. Hat-trick against the mighty San Marino.
Yeah, what can you do, eh? I mean, it's funny, I saw some criticism of Arsenal off the back of that one, you know, saying, oh, you let Gnabry go, and blah, blah, blah. But there really wasn't much more Arsene Wenger could have done, is there?
No, I don't think so. It was clear he wanted to leave. I still think there's something suspicious about the Bayern Munich involvement in that transfer. I think his head was... It all happened so quickly that he must, you know... Something must be going on behind the scenes there because, you know, with the greatest of respect to Werder Bremen, you know, being at Arsenal would have provided him with some Champions League football. I don't think there's any doubt he would have played at times this season if he had stayed. And I think probably he's got, you know, some bigger ambitions. But, yeah, look, if a player wants to go and a player has his head turned, there's not a lot you can do about it. Arsenal did offer him a new deal. Arsenal stood by him for the 2 years that he was out injured and didn't play when he went on loan to West Brom. So, you know, I don't think Arsenal can be criticised really in any way for the way they've treated Gnabry. And maybe, you know, you might ask questions of the way Gnabry has treated Arsenal.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough, especially, yeah, given the loyalty, the way they stood by him through so many injury problems, you know, I think it wouldn't have been too much to expect that to be reciprocated. David Ospina, last of all, kept a clean sheet against Chile because he didn't have to face Alexis.
Yeah.
So,
well, there you go. Okay, well, what an exciting interlull it's been.
I know, right? What a thrilling rundown.
It sure is. All right, look, we're going to take a short break. We're going to come back with part two, your questions and more right after this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer some of the questions or the topics that you you ask us about on Twitter at GunnerBlog and at ArsBlog and over on the Facebook page, facebook.com/TheArsBlog. Before we do that, though, a couple of little things to tell you about. The Arscast Extra Live is on Thursday, November 24th. So the day after the PSG game, whether we'll have Alexis or not, I don't know, or anyone? Will anyone be fit for that game? What's your prediction, James? I say no.
I say zero players. I think all the players and me will be injured.
Well, the thing is, if you're injured, chances are everything's going to go all right for us then.
That's true. We'll still win if I'm injured. So that'll be fine.
But we're going to be in the garage in Highbury in Islington on Thursday evening. Doors open at 6 o'clock. Podcast starts around 7 o'clock. So it's going to be myself and yourself, James. We're joined by Amy Lawrence. We're joined by Philippe Auclair. And who knows who else might pop along on the night. There's a bar. We can chat about Arsenal. We can chat about whatever, Alexis, anything you like. We'll be doing the audience Q&A as we normally do with an Arscast Extra, and you can get tickets right now from myticket.co.uk. So go to myticket.co.uk, search for Arscast, and you can get tickets there. Or if you go to the Arsblog Twitter page, you can see a link. I think I have a pinned tweet there. Which gives you a link directly to the ticket. So it'll be great to see you. Come along and join us. It should be fun.
Very nice. I will also pin a tweet once I figure out how to do it.
You've got to go to the webpage and
yes.
write a tweet, and then there's a little thing there that says pin tweet. So you can do it that way.
Okay. Lovely. And now everyone at home can do that as well, yeah. if they care to. And also, was there not some celebration tourinary news? Are we not nominated for something or other?
We are indeed. The Football Supporters Federation Awards 2016 Podcast of the Year. So Arscast, which includes the Arscast and this Arscast Extra, of course, is up against Atletico Mints, The Big Interview with Graeme Hunter, The Football Ramble, The Game Podcast, and The Guardian's Football Weekly Podcast. So, some fairly big opposition there, it's got to be said.
Stiff competition.
Stiff competition yeah. indeed. There's a Barcelona, there's a Real Madrid in there, and we're Arsenal. So help us get beyond the round of 16, folks. I'll put up a link on today's post with this podcast. You could vote for the Arscast. That would be very much appreciated. So
yeah,
we'll see.
That'd be lovely. Thank you very much. God, that'd be superb.
Mm. All right. Well, will we do some questions?
I think we will. We'll do it imminently.
Right.
We'll do it now, in fact.
Almost.
Have you got a question you'd like to pose?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Where is it gone, though?
you don't sound convincing. Look, if you haven't got any questions, that's fine. You know, I've got some questions. I could give you a question.
Yeah, you do that while I try and find the question that I was going to ask.
Okay.
Right.
This one comes from Curtis Fair. And I hope you're listening and not just looking for that question, just to be clear. But he says, "Hey, blogs." So it's addressed to you. He's not
right.
really bothered about my opinion.
Right.
"Do you agree with the treatment of Debussy? Clearly been frozen out of the squad, appears in training, but never on the bench." And I thought I'd give that one a shout, especially with Hector Bellerin now injured.
This is, yeah, it's a relevant question.
Suddenly relevant.
Yes. Yes. Well, interestingly, I sought an update about Matthew Debussy from the club's communications department.
Right.
Just this very morning. And I said, "What's going on? What's the story with Debussy? Come on, you can tell me. Just tell me. You know, be honest here. We're all pals. It's all good. You know, tell me." And they said he's on his way back from a calf injury and will be training this week, which means I guess that he's still some way away from playing, some way away from being ready for first team action. So I'm not necessarily sure he has been frozen out per se. I just think he's been injured. But it does mean Carl Jenkinson. It provides an opportunity for Carl Jenkinson for the next few weeks anyway, while Bellerin is out, or until such time as Debussy gets himself back to match fitness. But you know, to be honest, I'd be surprised to see Debussy again. Unless things got, you know, bad, really bad.
Yeah, well, I think the return of Jenkinson kind of put paid to Debussy's Arsenal career, which is funny in a way, because when Debussy arrived at Arsenal, that seemed to be precisely what was going to push Jenkinson out of the club.
Mm.
But he's come back from loan, and the only reason Debussy didn't leave this summer is simply because Jenkinson wasn't fit yet. That's the only real way I can make sense of it.
Yeah.
They couldn't find a club who was willing to take on his salary.
I mean, yeah.
That may have been part of it too. Mm. While we're on the subject, Othman, who's at O2 Aidri on Twitter, asks, who would you play at right back versus United? Jenkinson or move Mustafi and play Holding in the middle?
Oh, I hadn't really thought about Mustafi as a right back option, to be honest.
You're enforcing two changes on your back four rather than just one by doing that.
And would he play Holding, or would he play Gabriel. So that's a Gabriel Koscielny partnership. Gabriel had a fucking nightmare at Old Trafford last year. He was terrible that day.
It's a big ask for Rob Holding, you know, as good as he's been, to come into that game.
Yeah. I wouldn't have too many concerns, really, about Rob Holding if he were to play. But I just think making another change to your back four might not be the way to go, you know? So I think he'll play Jenkinson and hope that he can... Like, was the last time Carl Jenkinson played at Old Trafford, was it the 8-2?
I don't know. He was sent off in that game, wasn't he? Dark day for him.
Dark day for everyone, James.
Yes, it really was. I don't know if he's... I think he might have played there since then, maybe in a cup tie or something. But, there'd be some ghosts to exercise, certainly.
Yes, indeed, for sure. All right, well, hopefully that clears it up about the Matthew Debussy thing. Calf injury.
Okay. So. Calf injury. Calf. Oh, good to know. Yes. Have you... And we think it's a real injury, not one of those sort of Arsene Wenger injuries.
I don't know. I mean, would it be beyond the realms of possibility that the Arsenal Communications Department... you know, put out a story that isn't necessarily 100% of the truth? It's possible, isn't it? Who knows in this world we live in, of fear and misinformation, you just can't be 100% sure. But, you know, you got to take the info in good faith. And to be fair, he hasn't really been seen. There's been in training now and again, hasn't he? Sort of, piffling around the edges of it. So, we'll see. I think there's probably something a little more going on with the whole Debussy thing than just a calf injury, but we'll take that at face value. It's as reasonable an explanation as any.
Take them at their word.
Yeah.
Have you discovered your question you were searching for?
Yes, I have. I have.
Good.
This one comes from John Stuart Hendry on the old Facebook, and he says, with all the young players we've had over the years who have, rightly or wrongly, been destined for greatness but have ultimately not lived up to the hype, do you think there's something fundamentally wrong with the coaching system?
Ooh. That's an interesting question. Because my first reaction is to say that I don't feel like there's a particular weight of players who, you know, were destined for the top and then didn't necessarily make it. I actually think that Arsenal's conversion rate of, let's say, young teenage talent into first-team players is a pretty good one. I think it's probably among the best in the Premier League. If you look at them bringing players through from the academy, you know, I think that what happens is that expectations of those players sometimes spiral out of all control and all realism. And there was definitely a time where it felt like, I don't know if it was because we'd had the Invincibles and we'd had some brilliant, brilliant young players come through. I mean, I know they weren't academy players, but the likes of Vieira, you know, came through and went on to become the best midfield player in the world. So I think there was a time where any young player who broke into the Arsenal side, we thought, well, we've got a world beater on our hands here. I mean, I always think of Nicholas Bentner and Arturo Lupoli, you know, setting the youth divisions alight with their goal-scoring antics. And we thought, well, you know, we've got the new Thierry Henry just waiting in the wings. But I think that those expectations were the thing that was wrong there. I don't necessarily... I actually think that the academy and the youth development is still one of the strong points at Arsenal. And I think that, you know, you look at the current first team, you've got Bellerin in there, you've got Coquelin in there, you've got Iwobi in there. That's actually something that's quite hard for other English Champions League clubs to replicate. So, no, I don't think it's a particular indictment of the coaching staff. What about you?
I just think people underestimate how difficult it is to make the step up. That the gap between being a top youth level player and being a top senior player is huge. It's enormous. And there's only ever going to be one or two every couple of seasons that are going to be good enough to make the breakthrough. Like a lot of the Arsenal youth academy products down the years have gone on to have good careers. Good Premier League careers. You know, there was a time where there were just, you know, countless, like the Steve Sidwell generation, you know, those guys who pretty much all spread out across the Premier League and were middle to lower table teams, but they had good Premier League careers, you know? But I just think that it's so incredibly difficult. There's, on the one hand, right, there's this demand, this cacophony of noise for the team to be as good as it can possibly be, to be full of world-class players in every position with world-class backup. And at the same time, people are screaming for young players who, over the years, clearly haven't been anywhere near good enough to be given a chance as well. So I don't think you can have the two things. You can't want a team that's good enough to win the Premier League and good enough to win the Champions League and at the same time demand that a young player who you've barely seen for the most part, about whom you have little to no information in terms of their character or their attitude, how they operate in training, you know, are they committed enough? You know, are they dedicated enough? We don't have any of that information. You know, when a manager makes a decision about a young player, he's basing it on what he sees in the entirety of what that young player does at the club, not just in the cameos that we might see if he gets a run out as a substitute or a game in the Capital One Cup, right? And I don't think there have been very many young players that Arsene Wenger that has let go that have come back to haunt him. I can't think of any.
No.
I mean, people talked about Benny Cafobe the other last season, you know, when he scored a lot of goals for Wolves and got himself a move to Bournemouth. And they said, well, why didn't we keep Benny Cafobe? Well, one, because Benny Cafobe wouldn't have developed into the player that he was without regular football. So he dropped down, and fair play to him, he dropped down to MK Dons, wasn't it, and worked his way back up into the Premier League. But look at him in the Premier League now. He's not starting regularly for Bournemouth. I don't know what his goal scoring is like.
It's not great. I mean, I don't think he's got a goal this season. And as you say, yeah, he's coming off the bench for Bournemouth. He's not a regular in their team.
You know, so a good player who could have a good Premier League career there or thereabouts, but, you know, is he the right player for Arsenal? If you're complaining about Olivier Giroud not being good enough, you can't then say, we have to give Benny Cafobe a chance. Does that make sense?
Of course it does. And I'm trying to think, if you look at Manchester United, you think of Gerard Piqué, Paul Pogba, players who've left as young players, albeit on their own terms, rather than necessarily at the will of the manager, and gone on to have massive, massive careers. I mean, look, it's been a promising start for Serge Gnabry at Werder Bremen, but he's not anywhere like that level yet. I'm trying to think if there's anyone who does fit that bill. I'm not so sure that there is. There are a history of players who maybe haven't quite lived up to our expectations.
Sure.
You think of your Philippe Senderos's or something like that, someone who arrived with
Carlos Vela.
Exactly, yeah. You know, the Carling Cup generation, really. Who shone in those games but never quite converted it. Even, you know, Jeremy Aliadier, if you go back a little bit. But
yeah.
I think, as I said before, at the risk of repeating myself, I think that's because the expectations are too high, and as you say, the leap is so great from one to the other. You can't necessarily expect many players to bridge that divide. And as we've said, I don't think there are many who've gone on to do that elsewhere. It's suggesting that the problem's kind of endemic to Arsenal.
So. Yeah. It's the same at every big club. You know, how many players are coming through at the big clubs? When's the last time Chelsea brought through a young player? Now, the dynamic and the system and the setup there is different to Arsenal. You know, they're not necessarily, it's not part of what they do, whereas it is, to be fair to Arsenal, something that we do try and do. We do try and give academy candidates a chance. And the ones that come in and take their chances are rewarded for that. You look at Hector Bellerin. I know it's circumstances, all the things had to line up for him to be given that chance. But, you know, it was there, and he was there when the opportunity knocked, you know? So,
of course.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything fundamentally wrong. I just think it's incredibly difficult for a young player to make the step up from top youth player to top senior player. Very few of them can do it.
That's it, yeah. For every Hector Bellerin, there's a J. Emmanuel Thomas. Mm. And it's a difficult transition to make. Let's have another question. I've said that I've done that thing where I say that and I'm not primed at all, you know.
You're just...
yeah, I'm just winging it now.
Yeah.
This is from Neon Away Shirts on Twitter. And they ask, after Iwobi's rainbow flick for Nigeria, what's the most outrageous piece of skill you've seen from an Arsenal player?
Oh, fucking hell. I'm sure there are, like, countless examples of Arsenal players doing incredible things, but my memory is such that... What did I have for
I'll
breakfast?
Tell you, what
you know, I'm a bit like that.
I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but the reason I chose this question is partly because I just want to talk about this again. But I mean, there were about 80 things that Kanu did in an Arsenal shirt that could qualify.
Yeah, okay, I know the one you're talking about. And that would... Actually, that was the most outrageous because... What?
The Deportivo thing. Yeah. I think in terms of... If the word's outrageous, that's got to be the one, right?
Yeah, you should describe it because maybe there's some people, because this happened back in the 90s, so maybe there are some people who don't know this this piece of wizardry awesomeness.
Yeah, but basically, Kanu's sort of going through on goal in, I don't know, he's sort of in the left-hand channel, you know, what you describe as the Thierry Henry position, really, and instead of opening his body and taking a shot at goal, he just sort of steps over the ball and shimmies and shakes in such a fashion that without even touching the ball, the goalkeeper is kind of so bemused that he could just kind of crumples to the ground. It's like it's almost Jedi-ish kind of striking play, right?
Yeah, yeah. This is not the ball you are looking for.
Yes, exactly. And then he just, I forget, does he just roll the ball into the empty net once the goalie's flat out on the floor?
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, the nerve... That's what it is, isn't it? It's the nerve that he shows in even attempting it. Preposterous. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
amazing. A man with a dodgy heart, very, very steady in those moments.
It is absolutely brilliant. And I think there's like a, there's this kind of, when the goal goes in, there's this like, oh, look what he did. As the cheers start, there's also this, oh my God. That was pretty amazing. He scored an incredible flick as well, didn't he, against Middlesbrough? He did this, scored a great goal at, I think it was at White Hart Lane, wasn't it, where the ball was played into him and he had his back to the defender and he just flicked it over him, turned around the other side and lashed the ball into the net. That was a bit brilliant.
The Stamford Bridge as well, his hat-trick at Stamford Bridge, capping it with that brilliant goal from right out on the touchline, bringing it into the top corner.
I suppose, though, people are more talking about... flicks and tricks, though, are they stuff that?
Oh yeah. I thought we were just listing Kanu stuff now.
I mean, Ramsey's goal last year against Tottenham at White Hart Lane is fantastic piece of skill. There's a great video where you can see the Arsenal players doing a warm up, and they're in a circle. This is at Highbury, I think, and Dennis Bergkamp nutmegs Alex Song. I know it's not during a game, just warm-up stuff, but that's pretty good. I enjoy that.
Thierry Henry scored a back heel against Charlton, I always remember. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
Little 1-2 with Jose Reyes, I think. Reyes, and then just back heel it into the net. But yeah, there were so many moments that... I mean, we talk about Kanu's goals, but he contributed so many moments that just made you go, I mean, how did he even think to do that? You know, he was a really unusual player to watch. I mean, you know, a one-off, really.
Yeah.
I loved him.
Yeah.
Oh. But yeah, that was the moment for me, that Deportivo moment. That's the most outrageous thing I've seen.
So if you haven't seen it, make sure you look that up. Kanu Deportivo. I'm sure it's on YouTube. I think we should watch it. I think I'm just going to watch it now. Hang on.
Yeah, watch it. Why not?
Yeah. Sounds like there's a chainsaw going off in the background there.
Let me have a listen.
Kanu goal. Wow. Okay. So this is the Kanu goal. Ball's gone up in the air. Kanu running in. Amazing. Amazing. Arsene Wenger on the sidelines just laughing. What a fucking brilliant goal that was.
I have had a listen. I think it is a chainsaw, so there's not much I can do about that, really. I think it's a man with a chainsaw. I'm not going to tell him to put it away.
No.
They're chopping down trees near me.
That's why we need trees.
I don't know. To make paper or something. I don't know, Andrew, what they're doing. To clear the route for cattle.
Oh,
that's what happens in the rainforest.
Yeah. We need more trees. Stop chopping them down, fuckers.
I know. I know. They're putting out all the oxygen. Mm. But, you know, they won't listen.
All right. Here's a question from Anthony Brown at RedAnt83. And he says, should Arsenal play a more defensive game against Manchester United due to lack of attacking options? Hashtag safety first.
Well, we talked about this last week, but we kind of think that Jose Mourinho might go kind of safety first.
You know?
We might. So what happens if you get safety first versus safety first? Is it like when you put two ends of a magnet against each other? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Weird repulsion.
I guess you get Manchester United versus Liverpool.
Oh, God.
Or something.
I mean, how would you feel about a draw at Old Trafford?
I'd take it, probably. If you offered it to me now, I'd take it. Obviously,
I do not have that power.
Yeah. Well, you know, you need to work on that. I'd take it. I obviously would prefer a win. I think had we gone into this game with a fit Alexis, with a fit Hector Bellerin, I think we could be going into it feeling pretty confident based on the way Manchester United have been playing this season. Now I'm not so confident. I feel like we've been weakened or could be weakened quite considerably without those two players. So, you know, on that basis, I would take a draw. But, I don't think that approach, that kind of sitting off approach, is really going to work because of the way United, I think, are going to set up. Unless Mourinho really goes for it, but when's the last time a Mourinho team has like really gone for it and played a high line and left space in behind for us to counterattack against, or for any team to counterattack against? So I don't think safety first is necessarily gonna work. But obviously we've got to be mindful of leaving ourselves exposed defensively if we go and try and win the game, you know.
Yeah, like even if he senses blood with a couple of injuries to the Arsenal team, it's just not his style to attack in that fashion. What was the original question? Do I think that we should maybe put a defensive set up?
Yeah, play a more defensive game.
I mean, can we? That's the other question.
Yeah, that's...
You know, we talk about can Jose Mourinho play an attacking game. Arsene Wenger has spoken a lot this season about how much our team is set up to go forward. I'm not sure. I think it would be such a big change to then adopt a defensive setup that it might destabilise the whole team, asking them to do something that different. They've not really been asked to do that all season long. Mm. So no, I think we've got to play our game. I think we've got to. I mean, at the risk of sounding like Arsene Wenger, we've just, you know, got to do what we do, and do hope we do it well enough that's enough.
Yeah,
but it's. I don't think we can suddenly reinvent ourselves as this kind of solid defensive unit who can go there and play for a point. I don't really think that's in our makeup.
Right. Okay.
For better or worse.
Fair enough. Let's have. Have you got one more? Or
yeah, I'm sure I do. Let me have a little look. What do you think? Do you think we should be defensive?
I don't think that can be our main approach. I mean, obviously, we have to be. We have to be as solid as we can be, but I don't think, you know, we just can't play with 10, 11 men behind the ball. That's not the type of team that we are. Maybe if you play against someone like Barcelona, who at least leave you some space to counter into, then you could try that, and you would obviously have a more defensive approach against the team who look to attack that much. But as I said, I don't think United are going to really try. They're not going to go gung-ho at us. So I think... I don't think it's a case we'll cancel each other out, but I do think we'll just have to go and try and win the game.
Cool. So let's have this question. This one is from Steve Pye, who's at 1980 Sports Blog on Twitter.
Okay.
He says, which is worst? By the way, his question is not related to the 1980s, which is really disappointing.
Okay, oh well. And my hopes up there.
Which is worst? A, international break.
Mm-hmm.
B, the time between Christmas and New Year.
Right.
I don't have much against that myself, but there you go.
Yeah.
C, wasps. Or D, Jose Mourinho.
Oh, the clear winner. International breaks are annoying, but, you know, you can go to the cinema and stuff and help pass the time. Time between Christmas and New Year, I like it. I like that week.
I like it as well.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a thing, that people didn't like that.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just Steve Pye who doesn't like that.
Maybe. Maybe. I don't know what his problem is. Maybe he's just so excited about New Year's Eve, watching Jules Holland, that he can't bear the anticipation of, A, waiting for Christmas morning to get up and open your presents, and then you got to wait again for New Year's Eve to have the parties. I don't know. I like that week because it's kind of weird and nobody's really doing anything and you can lie around and eat sandwiches and watch football and all that. So I like it from that
point
of view.
There is football. Unlike the international break,
yeah,
there is football.
Exactly.
There.
Now, wasps are complete cunts. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But basically, Jose Mourinho is a human wasp. And that makes him far worse for me.
Even though it's wasps multiple, one Jose Mourinho is worse than many wasps.
Well, think of how many wasps you would need to make one Jose Mourinho-sized wasp. That's a lot of wasps.
Yeah. A wasp that big, that's going to kill you, really, wasp that big.
That would be they're called hornets.
Ah, that's what they are.
Yeah. So
I see.
Still, I just think that, you know, at least wasps, you can spray them with stuff, you can hit them with rolled-up newspapers, and that does them some damage. Whereas if you were to hit Jose Mourinho with a rolled-up newspaper, it would just be irritating to him. It would make him very crotchety, I think, being slapped in the head with a rolled-up newspaper. Now, if you were perhaps to roll the newspaper around an iron bar, maybe that would be a little bit better. But just for the sheer cuntery he's inflicted on the world of football. When you think back, James... You think back. Do you know who I blame for all this?
I don't know. Dolphins? Phil Collins?
Wayne Bridge.
He's in the jungle.
What? What do you mean he's in the jungle?
Yes.
Hang on.
Wait. Explain why you blame Wayne Bridge and I'll tell you about him being in a jungle.
Well, if Wayne Bridge hadn't have scored that goal against us in the Champions League quarterfinal. Was quarterfinal, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the Champions League quarterfinal. I believe that Arsenal team would have gone on to win the Champions League that season. Instead, Porto won it. And from there, Jose Mourinho became just part of football. Had he not won that Champions League, I think he'd be just fucking scratching around somewhere now, sniffing his bum on a fucking beach somewhere. So basically, I blame Wayne Bridge for that.
Well... If it's any consolation to you, Wayne Bridge is currently living in the jungle.
But why?
For a TV show, admittedly.
Oh, okay. Oh, like,
he is a celebrity in the jungle, and we have to get him out of there or leave him.
Leave him.
Leave him. Even after the programme terminates, just leave him in the jungle.
Yeah.
If you hate wasps and you think a giant wasp... is the worst possible outcome of that.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the Watford mascot, Harry the Hornet?
Well, he's a hornet. He's not a wasp. Hornets are more evil than wasps, I think.
Really?
Yeah, there's a video on YouTube of Japanese hornets. I don't know if you've ever seen this, but Japanese hornets are just evil, right? So they send out, like, a hornet scout, and he goes and comes back and says, yeah, there's a hive of bees over there. Let's go kill them. So, like, 20 hornets go in and massacre a whole hive of bees. They just kill them for the fun, for the sport. That's pretty evil.
That is pretty evil, actually.
So I would be careful if I was Gunnosaurus. Although I did see this other one where some other types of bees, what they do is when the scout hornet comes in, they cover him, right? They completely engulf this one scout hornet and they start vibrating. And they essentially, the vibrations create heat. And the honeybees can withstand heat to, let's say, 100 degrees. And the hornet, he can't. he can only do like 96 degrees. So they cook the fucker. They basically cook him by engulfing him. Yes, it's amazing. It's amazing. So go bees, I say. But anyway, to go back to the question, Jose Mourinho.
The conclusion is D, Jose Mourinho.
Jose Mourinho.
Great.
Yeah. What would your choice be on that?
Oh, yeah, Jose Mourinho, yeah. All right. I was just checking. I was just testing you.
All right, okay. Yeah. Okay. I think, here we go. Richard Franklin tweeted to say, in capitals, "Play FIFA, you pricks." Then he deleted that and replaced it with, "Play FIFA, you pricks! # ArsCastExtra." So thanks, Richard. We will.
Yeah, we will. Are you good at FIFA now?
No, I'm really terrible. Really terrible. I was playing the other night and I get beaten all the time. I'm like in Division 10 playing online and it's the worst. This kid the other day, I'm sure he was a kid like 14, he was playing with Barcelona and he was doing like flicks and tricks and rainbow flicks over my head. So I just quit. I was just like, fuck off. I don't have time
for
this.
I wish you could do that in real football.
Yeah, just quit.
You're playing Barcelona, just be like, oh, no.
Nah, fuck it.
How's your individual career going, though? You were playing for Arsenal last time you told me.
Oh, yeah.
Scoring goals as a number 10.
Got a bit bored of that, so I stopped. And then just busy with work, so I haven't really been able to play. But we won the league. I won the league and stuff, and then it's just, I need a new game.
Once you've done
now.
That, it's difficult to motivate yourself.
I need a new game. Final question. This is from Bjorn Alm, who's at AlmN5. And he wants to know, what do you think? Now, I don't know if it's, what do you think? What do you think? What do you think? Or what do you think? I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know either.
But what do you think?
Well, what do you think?
What do I think? But I'm asking you, what do you think? What do you think? What do you think? Or what do you...
Thoughts.
What do you think? Thoughts. They're terrible, aren't they? Thoughts. I try and block them out as much as I possibly can.
I try not to think anything. I try to just go on pure animal instinct.
It's worked pretty well for you so far, it has to be said.
Yeah. as we'll come evident to listen to this podcast, I don't think much. But when I do think... I think pictures.
Do you?
Yeah. More than words, I think pictures. There you go.
That's good.
Is this philosophical now? What is this?
I don't know if it's philosophical, but that's an interesting concept.
What do you think?
What do I think? It's hard to know. I write stuff down. Do you, as somebody who works in comedy, do you just sort of write down ideas?
Yeah, I have like notes on my phone sometimes.
So do I. I was looking at them the other day. Should underwear be a human right? That was one of them.
Yeah. Where's
another one here? Here's a note. Is he a big guy? No, he's just a fucking maniac. What does that mean? I've got no idea.
I don't. Sounds like a description of someone.
What is the circumference of my arse? There's another one. Can dogs be racist? Those are the things I think and I write down and I return to every now and again and go, what? I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, it's scary, isn't it? They sort of become devoid of all more meaning.
That's what I think.
Like, I'm looking now at my phone and it says, watching two sausage dogs fight. That's all it says.
I don't like dog fights, but two sausage dogs, yeah.
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 What if aliens landed and they all looked like human babies? That's something I've been wondering about. Is that what Arrival's about?
not quite, but the aliens are interesting looking, it has to be said, but those are the sort of things, strange, weird ideas that get written down and then never acted on.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, although if anyone reads the blog on a regular basis, they will know that from time to time, I do let those thoughts spill out. Generally, during an interlull, I'm quite happy to, you know, let my brain splurge onto the blog page, and it sort of calms things down a bit for me. So every so often, I can just go into the realms of surreal and what have you, and then my thoughts seem calmer. I don't know if that says something about me or not, but there you go.
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
I think so.
Well, there, keen insight.
Well, look,
we
made it.
Yeah. Yeah, we've probably given people more insight into our minds than we probably should have.
That's what happens in the interlow.
This is it. You just stray off the beaten path. Remember, you can get tickets to come see the Arsecast Extra Live on Thursday, November 24th at the Garage in Highbury in Islington. myticket.co.uk. Just search for Arsecast there. Get your tickets, come along, have a beer. It'll be great to see you. We'll be around afterwards for chats and free hugs. I think we should dispense free hugs as well. The world needs more hugs, so we'll do
sure.
that.
Yeah. Why not?
Why not? Well, all right.
As a one-off special, free hugs.
Free hugs indeed. All right, well, there'll be an Arsecast on Friday when we look ahead to the game against Manchester United, scary and all as it is. Keep your fingers crossed for Alexis, that his leg doesn't fall off, and we'll catch you on the next Arsecast Extra. Until then.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.